Blog Talk Radio.
General Quarters, Security Condition 3.
GQ, Security 3, sir. General Quarters 3, Intruder Alert. GQ 3,
it's not,
Intruder
it's not
Alert.
Really an intruder. All right, well, you know, I love my doorman, and he does a fine job. He's very diligent. Welcome once again, everyone, to Madame Perry Salon. I am your host and cruise director, Madame Perry, also known as Jennifer Perry, and I am thrilled to be back again. You know, I've got to say, the last few months, you know, the show has always been fun, but it's like lately it just gets more fun and more fun. I get more listeners, more subscribers, and just all the comments and questions and calls that I get from everyone really make my guests feel great and also keep us having more fun people. Last night, you know, we had Kazem Sultan, which any Todd Rundgren fan knows, Joan Jett, bass player extraordinaire. Kazem, that was so much fun last night. It seemed like everybody wanted to come in and get a piece of that action, and it was so much fun. Kazem Sultan, congratulations on your new EP bootleg. And who else have we had? Rudy Sarzo from Quiet Riot and Ozzy Osbourne. We had Holly Overton recently, who is, she writes for a TV show called Shadow Hunters. And she's got a book called Baby Doll. And so, yeah, she's been fun. Also, Jennifer Irwin, who has a book called Address, The Color of the Sky. But she hasn't gotten published yet because she's too busy having it made into a movie right now with Bradley Cooper, and I'm not allowed to say what other names and stuff, but she's going to be back on here soon. Coming up in the next few weeks, we've got Michael Fleeman. He's a true crime author, and if you live in Atlanta like I do, you know, he wrote about his last book was about the Rusty Snyderman murder in Dunwoody, but I think he's got about 13 books on true crimes, even one on the Lacey Peterson murder. Also, Adrian Belew, the Twang Bar King. So, yeah, we got lots more stuff coming up, a lot of fun things. And tonight is no exception. This is a guest I've wanted to get in for a long time. And he's got a brand new book of essays. He's the managing editor of Elite Daily, that website that you probably see all over Facebook and stuff. And let me tell you, it's called, I think, The Voice for Generation Y. But I'm definitely not Generation Y, but I like it. This is some of the best journalism I've seen in a long time. So let me welcome to Madame Perry Salon Mr. Greg Dybeck. Greg, come on in. Have a nice
Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to have you. Come to the beaded curtain and find a nice cushy place to sit.
Got it. All settled.
Okay, good. Be careful. One of my guests is a stand-up comic, Daryl Rhodes. He called in last night looking for his missing burrito and his hamster. I don't know what was going on with that.
Nice. I like how many stacks of my book you have here. Actually, every book on the shelf is my book.
Well, see, I know how to decorate. Anyway, so, yeah, I don't know what I think I'm going to start with your book. It's just published a couple of weeks ago. It's brand new. It's fresh, isn't it?
Very fresh. It's in that phase where it still doesn't feel too real. I have to sometimes walk into bookstores and remind myself that it's actually there for strangers to pick up. But yeah, it was published three weeks ago.
Yeah, I remember I saw it on Instagram when you had it in the box. You opened the box and I think you've been looking at it in stores, and it's just so it's got a great cover. Who did your cover?
So that's actually an illustrator named Mario Zucca. I've never met him in person, But it's cool because he, I guess, read the book before coming up with the concept. I had nothing to do with the cover concept. All I knew was that I liked the idea of having it populated with people. But he had the great idea to make every person illustrated on the cover actually coincide with one of the stories. So it's cool after you read the book, get to know some of these characters in my life, family members, friends, and some situations that I've been in, you could actually turn back to the cover and find some of these people.
Well, you know, I like, so it's basically a book of essays. How would you describe it about?
Yeah, I think a collection of humorous essays. It's, you know, about my life, about really coming up in New York City, or, you know, moving to New York City, and just having these aspirations of being a writer and really doing whatever it takes to, you know, be a professional writer in any sense. And then eventually landing the job with Elite Daily. Some of the essays also cover really just that strange duality of now working for the internet and, you know, being on the other side and creating this content and, you know, engaging with all these readers, and how strange that occupation can be on a daily basis.
And, you know, I think this is, I think that anyone who is a fan of either, if you don't know Greg Dybeck's work, I think if you're a fan of someone like David Rakoff or David Sedaris.
Two of my inspirations, definitely.
Oh, really? Yeah, two of mine too. Or Jen Lancaster. You know, you will enjoy this book. Jen Lancaster as well. A lot of her essays from Bitterest and New Black. And I don't know if you read any of her books or know her. But
I haven't, but I'll definitely check that out. But, yeah, yes. I think Sloane Crosley, Chuck Klosterman, those are all, you know, writers that
yeah.
I look up to. And it's, I don't know, I think nonfiction, personal essays and those type of narratives, it's definitely a niche genre. I think there's people who really enjoy it, and still a lot of people out there who don't even know it exists. And I think there's a lot of fiction readers that would like that style too. But, yeah, I felt like there was, or maybe still is, a void for, you know, a millennial voice, you know, writing in that form. So that's something that, you know, I was very interested in going into this book. I've just always found that form to be, you know, challenging but fun.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, I mean, I have a blog that I'm putting together of a book of essays, and it's called Memoirs of a Misanthrope. And I used to call myself an armchair sociologist until I studied research and journalism. I decided I was an armchair ethnographer.
Okay.
But I got to say, most of them are the true stories, too, that happened. But, like I said, being far from a millennial, you know, it was good for me to go in and read that and see your point of view and see where my prejudices were or biases, and think, oh, okay, these guys have their own set of challenges to deal with as well. And so entertainingly, so well done. Actually, I was going to say, we've got some callers on the line already, Greg. If you want to talk to Greg Dybeck, and believe me, you do, we're going to talk about his book, The Art of Living Other People's Lives. He'll also want to talk, he'll also answer questions about the writing process, publishing, whatever you have. This is the man to talk to. And the number to call in is 646-716-9922, and that is Blog Talk Radio assures me. It is toll-free within the continental U.S. Okay? And let's go ahead and get the first call. I've got two calls here, so I'll try to get you both in as quick as possible. Hi, welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. I just come in and introduce
Hello
yourself.
Hello there.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
This is Kimberly calling from London.
Oh, wow. Okay. Greg, this is Kimberly Klecka.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
Doing great.
And she's got
Good.
Her own media empire with books in several languages. The songs for the books come in different, not only different languages, but different types of music. Videos and such. And
that's so cool.
So
thank you.
So you have a special comment or question for Greg about
publishing?
Yeah, I do.
I'm starting to work on a young adult book, and it's going to be about international experiences, is going to have some fantasy and what young adults are going through and how they're dealing with life and situations worldwide. Do you have any kind of ideas on that? I mean, I publish my own stuff, but I'm working on that end of it at the moment. I've always worked with children. I'm doing the children's books, but I'm going to be going more to that end, working with more of an international perspective.
Yeah, no, that's very cool. Yeah, I mean, what comes to mind for me, I think, in that kind of like YA world or even a generation younger than me, I think it's going to be so interesting for them. I think just their experience and their challenges with social media and technology, because even as a millennial, I wouldn't say that I necessarily grew up fluent in these things, but I think being an early adapter, it was easy to become fluent. But now you look at this generation coming up, and it's a totally different experience for them. I keep telling this story. I was actually talking to some high schoolers now and asking them, just from a media perspective, how they consume their news. And the answer wasn't even Facebook. It wasn't even Twitter. The main answer was Snapchat, which is interesting. And what I pulled from that is there's this whole sort of subculture now of what's called dark social or dark social media. So it's Snapchat, WhatsApp. It's these platforms where everything eventually disappears and nothing consistent in there, you know, forever, because I think growing up fluent, that generation doesn't trust social media or technology. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see how their habits kind of dictate media and dictate all these other industries. And then just the underlying theme of just this distrust in technology, even though it's what they're always on, how they're consuming everything. So that was just kind of the first thing that came to mind, because I think that would be a pretty international experience.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Yeah, because, you know, I was an expat kid, and I was a third culture kid, and going through all those different experiences and being, you know, kind of integrating, and obviously the way the media was running in that part of my life was a few moons ago. But how it is today is a totally different world, and how they're connecting is a different way as well. So That's great. Thank you so much for that.
Of course. Thanks for the question.
Hey, thank you for calling, Kimberly.
Thank you.
Are you going to stay in a minute, or do you have to leave?
No, I'll stay in a bit. It's you know, it's getting a wee late, but I'll hang out, of course. No worries.
Right, that's
great.
Right, you're
in London. I love your guest.
Okay, well, if you could just move over to the next cushion and make room for the next person.
Okay.
Thank you, dear.
Okay, thank you.
You've been here before. You know how it is. And welcome to Madame Perry's Salon. I think this is one of our good friends already. Come on in.
Hey, this is Carrie Dunn.
Hi, Carrie. This is Carrie Dunn calling from Baton Rouge,
New
Louisiana.
New Orleans.
Oh, New Orleans. Excuse me.
Yeah, that's all right.
Perdona me. Well, you have a. I'd like for you to meet Greg Dybeck. Greg, meet Carrie Dunn.
How are you doing, Greg?
Author of Joe Peace.
Great. How's it going? I've never been to New Orleans, actually.
Ah, well, you're missing out, young man.
No, I know. I know I am.
No, we just moved here about a year and a half ago from Baton Rouge, and it's a much better place to be, I will say that. And I'm just looking. I don't know if I have a real question for you. I apologize for not being aware of these things. But just reading the description of The Art of Living Other People's Lives, and I could be entirely off base here, is it kind of a Chuck Klosterman type vibe that you utilize, or are you sick of that comparison, or you hate that comparison, or?
Oh, no, that's a comparison that I would absolutely welcome. No, I mean, he's definitely a writer that I look up to. And I think there's definitely an element of that. I mean, it's a lot of experience-based, but also, you know, commentary on culture, and I would say a very, you know, observatory type of format. So I hope more people do compare me to him. That would be amazing.
Well, I'm going to check out your book because I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm certainly not a millennial. I'm old enough to be your father, young man, but
I do. It's funny. I've a lot of my mom is obviously very proud and supportive, and she has her own business with a lot of clients who are not in the millennial demographic, and she kind of, I won't say forced, but you know, they all picked up a copy, and I've gotten some of the best feedback from them, which is really cool to hear. So hopefully it does transcend generations. And one thing, I kind of hate the word millennial, and I really, it's not, that wasn't really the approach with the book either, was to try to say this is, you know, the definitive millennial experience. I think all the authors that I read are older as well. So it really is just coming from, you know, a very personal place and commentary on the culture that I'm experiencing now. So I definitely don't think that it's a book that millennials, you know, can't engage with and enjoy.
Well, how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
I am 27.
27? Good God.
I know,
people
I just turned 27
all
recently.
The time. Man.
No, I feel like I'm getting old too fast.
But yeah, this is a book I think anybody can enjoy. I mean, some of the stories in here, I don't know if you plan to read anything tonight, Greg, on the
yeah,
air.
Yeah, I'm happy to. That's fine.
If you want to, while we have people listen, because some of these stories, like the underwear ad.
The seeking an underwear expert?
Yes, seeking an underwear expert.
Uh-huh.
All these stories are so good. Your family's vacation to Italy, you and your friends. These are all great stories. But if you've got something that you would want to read, we would love it.
Yeah, no, I mean, if there's any
I would love
that you had in mind or... you know, something that you would want me to read, I'm happy to. I have like 50 copies of the book in my apartment. So. yeah, let me, I'll look through it as we talk and see if there's anything
yeah,
I
you
can pull up.
Because
do you live in New York,
still...
Yeah, I live in New York.
And he's also, as I said but in the beginning, he's the managing editor of Elite Daily the online.
Yeah, I hit that website. That looks interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I did a little research on the way home from work. Not too much, I'm sorry. But checking him out.
No, that's awesome and obviously much appreciated. Would love to hear your thoughts on the book and everything.
Definitely. I love discovering new writers. It's, especially, like I said, it's... kind of the nature of I love smart ass commentary by people.
Yeah,
so
that's probably the genre that it falls under. The unofficial category.
There you go. Well, all right.
Now, have you started on a book tour yet? Are you traveling the country? Will we get to see you in person, or what's going on now?
So right now in New York, and then it's something I'm working out, seeing if there's other cities that make sense to travel to. But I had my first, the launch event was at Barnes & Noble in New York City, and then I had one in my hometown, actually on Long Island, which was really cool. Had, like, my English teacher show up, people I haven't seen in years, so that was a sort of homecoming. And then I'm going back to my college in 2 weeks, St. John's University in Queens, and then I have another reading lined up in Astoria, Queens, where I live now, so... it's cool. It's kind of the first ones all have a personal touch to it.
Great.
Good. What part of Long Island are you from, if you don't mind me asking? I mean, we're not stalkers or anything.
Do you know Huntington? It's in Suffolk County on Long Island.
Yeah, I used to go there a lot to stay with a friend who lived in Centerport to visit her.
Here. Okay, yeah, it's very close by there. It's, yeah, maybe like a 40-minute drive to the city.
So. Yeah, we get around. We have a good time there. Talk about your Barnes & Noble in New York. Now, you know, I saw a picture of that on Instagram, and I don't think, was it actually in the Barnes & Noble, or was it someplace else? Because you were up on a stage, an interviewer, big room.
Yeah, it was in the Barnes & Noble. Yeah, it was a really nice setup, and that was actually a friend of mine, used to be a coworker, and author of a book that also recently came out, Millennials of New York. It's a satire on humans of New York. So it's the same format. It's a, you know, photo of a person with a quote, but it's obviously all satirical and all related to, you know, millennial entitlement and, you know, problems and all that. So it's a really funny book. So he's a co-author of that. So we had an in-conversation.
Oh, good. Even So yeah, no, you should get out. You should come down to New Orleans and Atlanta and Nashville, and
that would be amazing. Yeah, it's I think now it's 3 weeks, so coming up on a month, and I'll start getting a better idea of, you know, where people are reading the book and who's interested, and I would love to, you know, map out some sort of tour.
I mean, I don't know if you're one of those internet billionaires that we always heard about, but you know, you've got all these people you know that are calling in that would be happy to say, hey, come on over here and have dinner or something. So, see,
if he is an internet billionaire and comes to New Orleans, he's buying it. So.
No, far from that.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so how long did it take you to write this? I mean, how long have you been putting these stories together?
I'd say in total, it's, several years. I think I always knew that I wanted to put out a book like this, so I was just always crafting essays, working on essays. But when I initially got the book deal, I had maybe 3 to 4 essays prepared, wrote a couple more for the proposal, and then I had a year between the book deal and handing in the final manuscript.
So what was that like, you know, putting together? I mean, you're fairly media savvy, or not fairly, you're definitely media savvy, which helps a lot. But then putting together a proposal and choosing the publishers to whom to pitch.
It helps, but then it also doesn't, because it's just two different worlds. And that was really interesting to me, because the environment I'm in, working for a digital media company in the middle of New York City, it's one of the most fast-paced businesses, you know, that you can have. It's breaking news. It's constantly brainstorming, pitching, sharing through social media. So when you have an idea, it pretty much gets done right away. And then in book publishing, it's obviously the slowest thing in the world. So it was weird kind of living between those two worlds. And I think it taught me, you know, a lot about patience, taking more time with my stories, but it was a really good experience. I had a great editor who really understood, you know, the voice and what I was going for. And even some of the essays, I know I'm not that old now, but even some of the essays I originally wrote, I was, you know, 25, maybe I just turned 25. So throughout the book, it's almost like I grow up in a sense, because it spans, you know, a few years of writing these essays.
You know, one thing I found funny in this is that I do social media work for people, and yeah, I'm probably about the age, older than you. Not as old as Carrie Dunn, for God's sake. Okay, Carrie, maybe I am. I love it's some people don't expect someone my age to know something about it, and I'm no expert, but I'm enough to be able to coach and teach people through that are older than me. I love the part about your mom. You said your mom was 53, and when she first started learning how to use the internet, you said it was like she was just handed some hieroglyphics. You said it was as if she had been handed a stack of textbooks written in hieroglyphics and asked to learn their contents. She had no idea where to begin and would call me every night. What's the difference between Twittering and tweeting? Do I have to be friends with strangers on Facebook and all that? And then, you know, and then how, you know, you and your brother were all, or your girlfriend, you're all talking about it, you know, oh my God, she keeps calling you. You think you, your brother Cole, you think she's never going to get this, right?
Mm-hmm. Little did we know.
Yeah, all of a sudden, she's got, you know, you said she's got more people than you.
No, but she just became really savvy at, I don't want her to, like, develop an ego now, but no, she got just really, like, there's a line in there where I equate it to the way that the young children are so easily able to learn a new language, because there's just, they don't have that shame. They're not worried about what people are thinking, so they can, you know, test language and say words that don't come out right, but they don't have that embarrassment factor. And she was kind of like that. It just became posting everything and anything and being able to, you know, test these different things. And then one day she had 20 hashtags on a post. She's like tweeting, Instagramming things like, you know, hanging out with my bae or like BFF and like pictures of my dad. And it's like she became a millennial. Like, and even still, I think she's just becoming younger by the day. It's strange. But she got really good.
She's doing hashtag Throwback Thursday and everything. And
yeah, all my friends started noticing and following her, and now she's like their favorite person on Instagram.
And if you don't mind me reading a couple of lines from that.
Yeah.
My friends, mostly girls, began to take notice. Your mom is like really living life like in her 20s now, my girlfriend noted one day. She's kind of the perfect millennial. Well, my mother did seem to have more energy. Her jokes were getting funnier. She even acquired two gay best friends that taught my dad how to dance without leaving his stiff Frankenstein arms at his side. It was as if my mother was growing younger before my eyes. I was home for Thanksgiving the night she blurted out, I'm such a hashtag slut. Colin, I nearly choked on our food. My father stood speechless behind us, thoroughly confused. That has to be fun.
Yeah, I'd never let her live that line down. The hashtag slut.
And by the way, I have a message come. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I was going to say, that could be, since we're talking about it, an interesting one. I could even read, like, the end of that or the follow-up, because it's, I think it's a really funny story, and there's, you know, a lot of jokes, and it just, so someone her age, like learning social media for the first time, is just a funny premise. But it actually, I think that has one of the most interesting endings to a story too, and kind of twist and finding out, you know, why she did this and where it led.
Yeah, whatever you want to read.
Yeah, I could do that. Did you say there's another message coming in?
Oh, yes. Robert Tune, he's an author. He lives in, let me look at this again, it's real tiny writing. Lincolnshire countryside in England. And I know
cool.
He's got a new book coming out soon, but he just wanted to call and say hello to you.
Awesome.
And that he's enjoying listening and that he's glad you're on the show. And congratulations on your book.
Very cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert, to you. Okay, so.
Where do you find all these people from England? This is amazing.
Pardon me?
I said finding all these people from England, this is amazing. You're going international with your radio show.
Yeah, you're global right now.
Yeah, New York, England, everything.
Greg, if I can ask, can I ask a question?
Okay. Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, not to call on millennials for everything, but what is... I guess your interpretation of your generation. I mean, I'm 51, so I'm not that old. You know?
Oh, okay. You're making it seem
I got
like
another
you're
10, 15 years in. But I'm just curious, because I was born in 65, so I was on the cusp of not being labeled anything. You know, I'm in that dead
mm-hmm.
zone. I wasn't really Gen X. I wasn't really baby boomer,
obviously.
Right. So I was pretty much a Nixon kid, which... very catchy, but I just how because you know you politicians or you know with all the safe space controversy and you know kind of coddling of youth that they kind of are pointing towards you know colleges and everything universities promoting this
mm-hmm.
I guess more soft I don't want to say soft nature but I mean. Is that, I think it's just more a quest to be more intelligent and aware of, you know, everything that's going on around them, and there's so much going on around them.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have to grow up post 9/11 or anything like that. You know, we were already, people my age were already adults, and, you know, it informed our lives, I guess it didn't shape them, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So
mm-hmm.
I think you guys... people your age get kind of a short shrift and dismissed as a voice and not just, you know, in politics, definitely in culture you're a voice, but, you know, more like politics being taken seriously. I mean, do y'all find that a problem? That I don't know if I'm even phrasing this right.
No, I think it makes sense. It's funny, actually, yesterday we had one of our political writers for Lee Daily, and we're obviously not a conservative publication by any means, and he was invited to go on Fox News with it's Tucker Carlson, so kind of like crossfire back and forth. So we were a little nervous. You know, he held his own. I think it was a good debate, but there was one point where Tucker, you know, even just kind of not like broke character, but just said like, you know, what do you know about, you know, what's unprecedented? Like, how old are you? And it's just, I think that goes to your point of it's just age is always brought up. And yeah, I think we do get the short end of the stick sometimes when it comes to commentary beyond culture and when it goes more into the political realm. I think it's very hard to define. I think, like you said, there's so much going on right now. There's so much access to information, and we really are the first generation growing up with this much access. Right. And I think it's also it's a transitional phase. I think I think you said a quest for, you know, intelligence. I think that's a really good way to put it. I think it's that journey to be as open-minded as possible to understand the economy on a global scale and different cultures. And it's tough because I think it does, you know, make things, I know, like political correctness and it's just, you know, the conversation just becomes so muddled sometimes because there's so much going on. But I wouldn't even really change my answer too much because I think that was really well put how you said it, just kind of that journey for, you know, more information, you know, to be intelligent, to make sure that every side is heard and not, you know, judging anything too quickly. And I mean, that's something that I'm personally proud of. I think, you know, the people that I work with, you know, I also understand them probably, you know, in New York is a very different environment in itself. But, mm-hmm. you know, from the people I've been able to, you know, encounter and other millennials, I think it really is just, you know, a really refreshing open-mindedness. And I don't think, you know, we should be at a point anymore where our voice is getting dismissed in, you know, things like politics and all that. But, you know,
it really infuriates that our country does this to our younger adults or, you know, I'm saying younger adults, but, you know, people in their 20s, yeah. early 30s, they dismiss them as not having any experience, but yet they've been the voice of change. Pretty much,
yeah.
Vietnam War, you know.
Oh, definitely.
Well, even before that, the civil rights era, you know, in the late 50s and everything. I mean, the voice of change has always come from the young.
Right. And I think that's part of the dismissal, too. I think there's always, you know, an aspect of fear involved. So you will want to, you know, shun a certain group.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I dislike somebody making an assumption because of someone, anything, the age, at any spectrum of age, by saying, well, how would you know about that? Well, you know, I don't. I know about Shakespeare and the Bible, but I wasn't around when they were written.
Yeah, right.
You know, so how can you act like someone wouldn't know something? Or take something for, you know,
our
granted.
Our country seems to define everybody by a certain, you know, you're a woman, you're gay, you're a minority, you're, you know, middle class, you're rich, you're poor. I mean, they can't just say you're a human being. Let's talk and figure out what you're all
mm-hmm.
about. Yeah.
So many of those cultures have, so many of those boundaries have been broken for us. So it's tough. I think a lot of times it's just two people having completely, you know, different conversations because it's, you know, it doesn't, like you said, have to be so labeled or, you know, put in a box. But things like politics, yeah, you know, it still tries to be neat like that and labeled and categorized.
Mm. Interesting. Well, unfortunately, I have to go, but I just wanted to thank you for speaking with me, and I'm definitely going to acquire your book and check it out. And
you're going to like this, Carrie.
Let you
know
what I think about it.
Yeah, no, this was really great.
Could Jennifer send me your email address by any chance so I can?
Yeah, that'd be great. No, I would absolutely love to hear what you think.
Okay, well,
I will.
See
you,
Jennifer,
see you.
I'm sorry, I gotta go.
Stan.
Yeah,
And if you want his email
to
address,
is one of my favorite books. So.
Which one?
Killing Yourself to Live by Chuck Klosterman. It's kind of a travelogue, Jennifer. He visits the places where famous rock stars or events in rock history happen. So, and just about his travels doing this. So, anyway.
If I don't get this information to you soon, Carrie, just know that you know I'm on the road a lot, so just look forward on the stall of the ladies' room and any truck stop, clubs or anywhere.
Sorry, dog's going crazy.
From Asheville to New Orleans.
All right. Well, Greg, talking to you, and best of luck with your book.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Okay,
it's a pleasure.
Y'all have a good night. Take care, Jennifer.
Hey, thanks,
Carrie. I
gotta
leave the lounge now, but I'm gonna steal a bottle of vodka on the way out.
Wouldn't
we'll
have it any
later.
Other way. All right, thank
have
you,
a good
Carrie.
Evening. Bye bye.
I love Carrie Dunn. Greg, his book. I did some publicity work for one of his books is called Joe Peace, and just in a nutshell, it's about a homicide cop in Austin who's pretty mediocre at his job. And he's a bad crack addict, so he loses his job. And when he comes out of rehab, the only people that will hire him are the people he used to arrest.
That's
and so he becomes, so then he becomes a drug lord, a criminal, and he ends up being extremely good at that and taking over with payday loans, nightclubs, you know, all kind of stuff. It's a very good, it's called Neo-Noir, very good book.
Very cool. It sounds like it should be a movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, he made a deal with somebody pitching the movie or handling it, but, you know, those things kind of go slow, so you never know. But,
yeah, of course.
So are you going to read to us?
Yeah, sure. I could do that. Let's see what makes sense. Was there anything you could think of? I could do another portion of Hashtag Mom, or is there anything that you think would be good for the show?
That would be good, or the underwear sales, or what else? And it's got a variety, too. It's not just all home. Then you've got the things where you and your friends are traveling. Those are good stories, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could do underwear. I still own that pair of underwear, too. It's weird. Let's see.
And don't forget, folks, it's also if you take Uber, and I enjoy it too. There's also some Uber stories in there.
Mm-hmm. I'm just looking at because the underwear one's fairly long, so I'm thinking of looking for the perfect spot to end off where everyone will say, "I need to know what happens," and go buy the book.
Oh, good.
Okay, I think I found it.
You're a professional. I can be good at that.
No, this is still all new to me.
Get them all teased. Draw them in.
Cool. I'm ready to go when you are.
Please, go ahead.
Cool. All right, so this essay is titled Seeking an Underwear Expert. We won't finish the whole thing, but basically it's one of the lower points when I was a struggling writer in New York City, doing anything I could to keep that title as professional writer. So one of the things that came along had to do with men's underwear, and I didn't necessarily think that I was above any writing job. So I'll get right into it, though.
I know the feeling.
All right. When I was 10 years old, I made the change from tighty whities to boxer shorts. It was a transition that changed the world as I knew it. What was once uncomfortably held captive in a prison of fabric could now roam freely. A few years later, I discovered boxer briefs, and once again, my universe was turned upside down. Unlike its free-spirited cousin, the boxer short, boxer briefs offered actual support. Where tighty whities would suffocate and cling, the boxer brief allowed enough room to breathe while still providing reinforcement. My discovery of boxer briefs was the first time I saw hope for nuance in a world that, as a middle school student in suburbia, was overwhelmingly clear-cut. Life up to that point had been a matter of black or white, right or wrong, too much support or none at all. Boxer briefs opened my eyes to the gray area of life. a perfect balance between too much and too little existed after all. After my decision to go through life wearing boxer briefs, I stopped thinking about underwear altogether. The first time the subject crossed my mind again wasn't until I was 22 and had been living on my own for 6 months. I received a call from my boss at the small website I was writing for and listened as he explained that he wasn't able to raise enough money to continue operations. In short, I was out of luck. One moment I had a job and the next I was unemployed, wondering for the first time ever how I'd pay next month's rent. The thought of moving back in with my parents became a terrifyingly real possibility. They had warned me that my job wasn't secure enough to move out, but that had only pushed me to get my own place sooner. Up until the moment my boss called, I had been living my childhood dream of having an apartment in New York City and supporting myself through writing. The paychecks weren't spectacular, but I was able to work from home. I didn't even have to change out of my pajamas or boxer briefs if I didn't want to. Best of all, I could call myself a professional writer. It didn't matter that I was writing 200-word articles on obscure bands I'd never heard of for a website nobody read. I was getting paid for my craft, and that made me a professional. I'd become so obsessed with finally being a paid writer that doing anything other than writing wasn't an option. Immediately after the call, I went online to find a new writing opportunity. I scoured Craigslist for hours, sending my resume to just about anyone willing to exchange actual money for words. That's when I came across the job listing for a talented writer interested in covering the exciting men's underwear scene. I hadn't even realized men's underwear had a scene. It was late, but I decided there's no harm in sending out one more resume. For the next week, the only emails I woke up to were motivational quotes from my mother and spam urging me to order the latest groundbreaking male enhancement pill, guaranteed to work or my money back. Then one morning, a reply to one of the hundreds of jobs I'd applied for appeared in my inbox. The subject read, "Seeking an underwear expert." The email explained that the leading men's underwear website on the internet was looking for someone to review newly released underwear. There's no actual website given, but Bobby, the mystery man behind the email, assured me that I'd be given all the details during the in-person interview the following Wednesday. I was certainly no expert on underwear. I couldn't even name three brands. All I knew was that underwear ads that appeared in magazines and on billboards were perfectly photographed and positioned so that anyone passing by couldn't escape the ever-present giant bulge, similar to how the Mona Lisa's eyes always follow you around. With my minimal funds running lower each day and no other prospects on the horizon, I decided to take the interview. I imagine that there was a Hemingway quote floating around somewhere that went something like, "A good writer can fake being an expert in anything, even men's underwear." On the morning of my interview, I found myself in a staring contest with my underwear drawer. I couldn't help but think there'd be a test upon arrival, perhaps an underwear check at the door, and they'd only allow me inside if I were wearing a worthy pair. I pushed aside the generic brand boxer briefs and dug for the Calvin Kleins I'd picked up somewhere along the way. I didn't even know if Calvin Klein underwear was popular. I would have checked the website to find out, but I had no idea what it was, or more importantly, if it really existed. If there were ever to be a mass human trafficking ring set up through Craigslist, it would most likely be disguised as a job interview for a men's underwear website. But the combination of needing money and a burning desire to work my way up in my chosen career of writing made me take my chances. When I arrived at the address in the email, I was surprised to see there was no office buildings around. Instead, I stood directly in front of a luxury residential building on the Lower West Side of Manhattan that overlooked the Hudson River. It was the kind of apartment building I'd only ever seen on commercials for The Real Housewives of New York City. I considered turning around and going home. Anything can happen behind closed apartment doors. People die in their apartments and aren't found until weeks later when neighbors start complaining about a peculiar smell. I didn't want mine to be one of the bodies found when the police finally raided the luxurious slaughter den of New York City's elusive underwear killer. After taking a lap around the block to clear my head, I decided to push forward and at least see what the inside of the building looked like. Before heading in, I called my roommate and told him my exact location, along with strict instructions to call the police and my parents, in that order, if he didn't hear from me in an hour. If anything were to happen, I at least had on my best pair of underwear. I was thinking that was a good spot to cut it off before I enter the building and go to the interview.
That is good. All right. We have another guest who's coming to Madame Perry's Salon, and it is my BFF, Kenya Colbert. Kenya, come on in. Welcome and meet Greg Dybeck.
Hello, Greg. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
Thank you. Can you scoot over a little bit so I can sit on the big kitchen?
We can get close. It's fine.
Thank you. I'm going to plop right here. This is a good spot. I love the little underwear story. It just reminds me of my mom when I was growing up, and my mom used to always, that was her threat forever and ever.
What was
Please make sure you have on decent underwear when you leave home.
Go ahead.
No, I was gonna say if my life was gonna end, I had to have good underwear on at least.
Exactly. My mom was always afraid. Not that, I mean, I'm sure she was worried that something might happen to us, but she was afraid that something would happen and people would see us with our worst underwear on.
No, that's a very real concern.
And the family
really, whoever knew.
And
I'm
of course,
Jennifer,
I said, and the family name would be ruined, Kenya. And of course, he's worried going into this interview about writing about men's underwear. Are they going to do a check? Who knows? Are they going to do a check? You know, who knows? What are they going to make him do? That's why he cut it off. Now you have to get the book to find out. And believe me, it's a
now
good story.
I must know. Great interview, guys. You guys, this has been fun. I've really enjoyed listening so far.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, she had been texting me little things along the way, Greg, saying how much she enjoyed it. So if you're listening live, we're talking to Greg Dybeck. He's a Dybeck. He's a manager. Am I saying your name correctly? I should have asked a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You got it right.
All right. He is the managing editor of Elite Daily, and he is the author of the book The Art of Living Other People's Lives. It's a collection of essays that are just, they are funny. You never know. You think you know where they're headed, you get pulled into them, and then you never know where it's going to turn around and end up. Because you know, that's one reason why, you know, I like reading stories about truth, like, you know, true crime or biographies or so forth, memoirs, because, and Greg is a writer, you know, real people's lives take twists and turns that, you know, your editor would never say, oh, come on, that's great. There's like, no, people wouldn't believe that. That wouldn't happen that way. Don't make it do this. You know, that's not your backstory, your arc or whatever. You know, this is like, but what really happens in real life is bizarre like this. So,
That's why so many people always end up saying, you know, after telling a story, you can't make this up.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, you also write for a lot of other publications, Vice, Business Insider, Thought Catalog, Google Play.
I had in the past.
Yeah. Oh, in the past, we'll say, how do you have time for all this, and how do you?
Yeah, well, now those are pretty much direct competitors to Elite Daily, so I don't write for them anymore. But, as throughout this journey somewhere after my underwear gig and before Elite Daily, I freelanced and, you know, just built up, you know, a byline wherever I could.
You know, Elite Daily, though, that you talked in one story about being on the, I think you were on the subway and happened to look over and seeing somebody reading an article. And it was a about something that was your idea, or you had pitched the idea for somebody to write about this. And that's
that
gotta be a cool feeling.
It's cool. In that instance, it was the weirdest article they could have picked. But yeah, I've seen that before, where people are either reading an Elite Daily article. I've heard people talking about like videos and stuff we've done, like having debates on the subway, or sometimes I'll even have like a t-shirt that says it or a bracelet, and people have, you know, stopped me and come up to me and said that they read the site. So really cool. I think we have a really engaged readership.
Greg, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me ask you, I've ridden the bus a couple of times, not many, but on the train. Do you get a lot of material just riding, being on the train or on the subway with people?
Oh, absolutely. I did a lot of my writing on the subway, just, you know, trying to find any time to write while working full time and working on the book. But there's actually the title story. There's an essay in the book called The Art of Living Other People's Lives. And it's a collection of quotes I've heard from strangers over the past 5 or so years that I've just collected, you know, in New York City or throughout my travels. And just those moments where you're walking down the street or walking into a coffee shop and, you know, you pass by. I say it's almost like when a car goes by blasting music and you just hear that, like, snippet of lyrics. Right. And sometimes you just catch these things and they just stick out so much. And it's like, what is going on in this person's life right now? So I started writing those down. It's kind of creepy, but I started collecting those in, like, a notebook and on my phone. And I've got maybe like 30 or 40 of them, and that's the last chapter in the book. And there's some weird ones.
It's a good one, Kenya. That's a good one too. It's got some great stuff in there. Oh, look!
I'm looking at it now.
I'm sorry. It's just our friend Kimberly has come back in. Kimberly, come on back.
Yes.
From London.
Hi.
Okay, and Kenya's here. Your old friend Kenya.
Hi, Kenya. How are you?
Hello, Kimberly. How are you, stranger?
I'm doing great. Great. Doing brilliantly well, thank you.
Did you get to hear Greg read, Kimberly?
No, I didn't. I missed that part.
Oh, no.
Oh, I heard. It was great. It was great.
I miss you reading. Oh, my gosh.
You have to go back and listen. It's really a funny story. You have
it
to go
is.
Back.
And he cuts it off right in a place where you have to go get the book and read it. The chapter you were talking about, though, from in response to King's question, Greg, about comments. You know, that was.
we should read a few of them.
Do you mind?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. I mean, you don't mind if I read them, or did you want to read them?
No. Go for it. Actually, it would be interesting to hear someone else say them, because I'm used to reading them. But, yeah, let's do it.
Okay, something written from New York, but in a slightly southern accent, right?
Yeah.
Okay. He says, here are some of the notable blurbs I've collected over the past 6 years. Sure, I think about going to the gym. But then I think about how I'm going to die one day. I really don't get. Okay, I just really don't get why when one person gets fired, everyone else doesn't get a raise. Now, that makes good sense.
Right?
You know,
a little bit.
The logic behind that
last
one.
Somebody says, I was walking home last night and saw Courtney Love peeing on a stoop. This is another one. And these are all just different things you've heard at different times. This is not one conversation, okay? This is just different lines from different times she's overheard. Show me where Kuwait is on a map, and I'll give you a blowjob.
That is a good one. I think I need to use that in the UK.
I swear I'm not mad. Keep asking me, and I will be.
I agree with that. I feel like that sometimes. I agree with that. When people keep asking, are you mad? I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
It's true.
No, really. I'm not mad. But are you sure you're not mad? Because you're kind of looking like you're mad. I said I'm not mad. Now I'm mad.
And apparently you've got, and I think this happens to me a lot too, and this is what I write down, Greg, and I'm crazy about you even more because you know how to pick out these little gems out of conversations. You're taking them. It doesn't matter, you know, that you don't know what the whole context is. They're little gems in themselves, aren't they?
Yeah, like little stories.
Here's
wow.
one.
Weird poetry.
This is what I've been thinking about lately. It says, and this is what I'm saying, got that crack, X, dope you need? Got Adderall for the white people, too.
what?
I get it. We're all immigrants, but we're also fucking Americans. Okay?
Wow, yeah. Well, Kimberly's sitting there thinking, really?
Kimberly,
what?
Listen, Kimberly's hip to to the jive. She's been around the block. She's been around the globe several times. She's pretty.
Yeah, she has a few times, and she's heard some crazy things too. Yeah, I should add those with you, Greg.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking how cool that must be to. I've actually heard so many things. I have really short memory, so I probably would screw it up trying to. I would have, literally have to walk around with a tape recorder to capture all of these things. But how cool your brain is to actually just capture that like a picture and hold it.
Right.
And
I like
cool.
I like his brain a lot too, Kenya. How about this? My Tinder date wants. My Tinder date wants to be a Bill Clinton impersonator.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I like, is redneck a race?
Is redneck a race? Yeah, that's a good one.
Sort of. Maybe it is.
Sort of, yeah. That's why I don't go to my family reunions, Greg. Anyway, here's what. I need money so bad I can't even jerk off.
That's one of my
wow,
favorites.
You really do need money.
Kenya, you're a sports person, Kenya. Here's one. If the Knicks win a championship before I die, I'll donate my balls to science.
You know what? No, thank you, but I get the point.
My boss caught me putting booze in my coffee again.
That one was
actually
really intense.
I really
want to
know where
the world.
That was what?
That one was intense because it's like it's the again that you're like, oof, that one hit me.
I'm just thinking, where do you work where you need booze to start the day and you keep getting caught?
Come on, Kenya. You and I met working together. Come on, you know that.
But I'm just saying, but we keep doing it. We need to change our careers. Wow.
Listen,
the things people say.
I know. Christmas is everybody's favorite holiday, even the Jews.
Really? You know what? It really does make you just stop and think, Greg, what people, I mean, just the different conversations. It's like when you're talking, you know how sometimes you can walk in on a conversation that someone is having and you walk in at totally the wrong time. Totally.
Right.
It's not what it sounds like, and people say that all the time.
Yeah, completely out of context. But it also makes you wonder what people have heard you say, too, when you're just having a conversation.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, I need to really be careful because sometimes I'm thinking out loud, and it might not really go over well. I mean, where, Greg, I don't want you to walk up on me and I'm saying something that is so weird.
Oh, well, I've perfected it. I talk about it in the beginning of the essay. Like, I will, like, it got to the point where I realized some of these were so good that I, like, went on, like, hunts for them. So I'd, like, have headphones in but not listen to music or pretend to be reading a book. And if you're doing that, and especially in New York where it's crowded and no one's paying attention anyway, you could get, like, oddly close to people and kind of eavesdrop on what they're saying.
That's pretty cool. I'm going to start doing
it. Oh, my gosh.
I'm with you, Kimberly. I think I'm going to just start doing it just for the heck of it to see what, like, as I tune in, I'm going to wait until they're in the middle of a conversation. Then I'm really going to just tune in and see what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
How weird that is.
It is like
just
a switch
down,
you kind
Kenya.
Of turn on.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Just sort of like,
hey. Wait, I tell you,
Go ahead, hon.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you come to UK and you come to, like, Scotland and, you know, Wales and everything, and you hear them talking, you don't even know, understand a word they're saying.
Oh, yeah.
Some of their humor is out there.
Yeah, and they curse so much.
Oh, they do, and they drink their whiskey, and, you know, and of course, and they keep saying on Ireland, they're like, feck this and feck that and fecking everything. It's hilarious.
Yeah. I'll need the UK edition.
Oh, yeah, that would be good, Greg. You a damn genius. Anyway, yeah, so have you ever watched the show Father Ted, the Scottish show about the priest?
Yes.
The three priests? And even there on their signs, there's this place called Craggy Island, Scotland. Have you heard of it, Greg?
No, I've never heard of that.
Yeah, even on their signage, they'll say stuff like, it'll be F-E-C-K, feck off, or stuff. And another one, though, you may want to check out, too. I think you'll get a kick out of, I don't know, Kimberly, Kenya, I know you know this person, but Kimberly, mm-hmm. there's a comedian friend of mine who lives in Glasgow. Her name is Janie Godley.
Mm-hmm.
And Glaswegian, but she's a very funny woman, stand-up comic and actress. But there's this thing she wrote, Greg, you can find it on the Internet, and it's where she's on a train one day, and there's a couple in front of her named Tim and Freya, and they're having a fight. And she starts tweeting out their fight. And then every now and then Tim gets up, and Freya calls her friend and adds in some stuff. And so Janie's testing. By the time she gets off the train, her daughter's there. She says, Mom, this thing has gone viral. What are you doing?
Mm-hmm.
And so the story has gone crazy. The story of Tim and Freya. And so if you go online, though, you can see there's a short video of Janie reading the whole thing.
And that's finally, great.
But the guy, Tim, finds it and gets in touch with Janie and says, thanks for letting me know what she was saying to her friend every time I got up on the train and left the seat for a while.
Oh,
because
my
otherwise,
God.
I would, yeah,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah, even on Elite Daily, we do articles like that all the time, and they do so well. Like someone live tweeting, there was one where someone was live tweeting a breakup next to them on a plane that like went viral for us. So it's funny. There's all these stories are out there. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And check out Elite Daily, everybody. It's got great stories, great journalism, and definitely get Greg Dybeck's new book, The Art of Living Other People's Life. You will love it. You will love me for telling you about it. And, Greg, I am so grateful that you came to the show tonight, that you were my guest tonight in Madame Perry's Salon, that you found a nice little cushion that I hope you can call your own and come back to and visit someday.
Very comfortable here. I would love to come back.
Okay.
Yay.
Thanks to our pals with London, Robert Tune, Kimberly Klaxka, Carrie Dunn calling from New Orleans, Kenya calling from right down the road from me here in Atlanta, Georgia. We're all so grateful and have just enjoyed you so much, Greg. I hope you'll come back soon. I don't want to wear out my welcome with you, so we got to let you go.
No, thank you so much.
You got a girlfriend waiting for you.
Great interview, Greg. Great, great, fun.
Yeah, it was wonderful.
This was a lot of fun.
Nice meeting you. All the best with your great project. Hey, have a ball with it.
Okay, thank you so much.
And I'm sharing the links for your books on everything on Reddit, Tumblr, LinkedIn, Twitter, Google+, everything.
Beautiful. I appreciate that.
And so definitely get his book, The Art of Living Other People's Lives. Greg Dybeck, we love you. Thank you so much. And come back again to Madame Perry's Salon.